I love shopping.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
In our previous episode, you got a taste for how much Astrid loves shopping and what role shopping can play in your solo adventures. This week on Solo Travel Talk, we're going to talk about the tactics. Things like haggling, where to go, how to do your pre-trip research, how to budget, and the very practical topic of getting your items home.
I want to turn a little bit to some of the practical side of shopping, not to be the wet blanket, of course. You know, you've told all these great stories about all these adventures that you're having with your shopping. But one of the things that stuck out to me in almost all of the stories you told there is haggling. And I know some cultures famously feature haggling as part of their shopping experience, you know, because we're all about overcoming obstacles here on Solo Travel Talk. It seems like some solo travelers would look at that as an exciting proposition, but then others, it's a huge turnoff.
Oh, yeah. A lot of English-speaking or people from English-speaking countries, they're used to going into stores, knowing the price, and that's it. They, you know, there's no getting a sale. Now, they might go on the internet and go on eBay and do that kind of thing. But as far as going into a shop and trying to get something at 50% off, 80% off, I mean, that is like, they don't even like to negotiate that much when they're buying real estate. You know what I'm saying? It's just not in the way that...
It's not a part of our culture.
No. But in most every other country that's not an English-speaking country, they are hagglers. That is in their culture for centuries. They're basically born hagglers. And, you know, you have to get in the mindset. If you're going to go there and buy anything, you know, if you're willing to pay full price, I mean, you might be paying 8 times too much for something. I mean, you know, so you have to be able to not get frustrated by this, and some of them are real fast talkers, and they do all kinds of things to kind of disorient you and everything. But you know, that's the way that that their culture works. So you got to kind of look at it as it's a game, and that's what I always look at it. It's a challenge. You know, how am I going to get the best price? What really am I willing to spend on something? Because the price is really always changing. There is really no set price on anything in places that haggle. You know, in some countries you can get things, you know, they'll mark them up 5 times. Say something is $25, you can get it for $5. Now, if you don't know that, and most Americans, they'd go, oh, they said $25. I could never walk out of here with it $25. That is so rude, you know. But they know that $5 is their limit. You know what I'm saying? So you got to get over thinking that you're going to be rude, because let me tell you, they're going to be really rude to you in their own way. They're not trying to be rude. It's just the way it is. There is a lot that goes into haggling. First of all, it depends on how well the merchant is actually doing that day, that month, or that year. That will change the price. Now, I have a couple of stories about this that I want to share. And it's really a shopping tip. And it's definitely in the Middle East. And somewhat in the Far East, but try to be the first customer of the day in a shop. I have a story, to the Istanbul Grand Bazaar. The first day that I went, the first shop I went to was in this place with all these purses. And I mean, they were beautiful leather purses in white and coral and turquoise blue and really vibrant vegetable dyed colors that were just beautiful and beautifully polished. The leather was cut well. The metal on them was just beautiful. And I thought, oh, those are just really fine. I said, well, how much are they? He said, $120. I said, oh, I'm not paying $120. You know, first of all, I've just gotten here and there's no way. And so I kept looking. He kept trying to show me this, that, and other. I said, I'm just not, you know. He said, well, how much are you going to pay? I said, I'm not going to buy anything. You know, I mean, you know, I just got here. And so he said, well, I can come down on my price. He says, really, which one do you like? And I said, look, I'm not going to buy anything. I just got here. You know, I just want to look around. He said, which one do you like? You know, he kept wanting it. I said, well, I think the coral one is just beautiful, if you want to know the truth or whatever. And he said, how much you pay for that? I said, I really don't want to buy anything. And I said, well, and then he kept on, and he looked at me straight in the eye. He says, please, please, please buy. And I said, come on. And he said, if I don't sell the first customer of the day, I know I'm going to have a bad day. And he said, really, please buy. And I said, well, you take $40? And he said, oh, yeah. And so I walked out with that beautiful purse for $40, and it looks really nice. I mean, it is beautiful. But the moral of the story is the first customer of the day in the shopkeepers, they have a cultural belief. If they don't sell their first customer, it's going to be a rotten day for business. So you can get your best deal, some of your best deals at the beginning of the day, as well as at the very end of the day. If you go at the very end, I'll never forget again in Istanbul, I was walking back to my hotel, and it was about 10:30 at night, and I noticed this jewelry store, and it sold a few other things. It was still open. I said, why are these people still open at night? I mean, who's out buying jewelry? So I went in there, I started looking, and I asked him how much. I said, why are you open so late at night? And he said, I haven't sold the amount that I need to sell today. And I said, oh. I said, well, I really like that ring. I said, but, you know, I don't have, I don't have a lot of money. And so I can't pay that price you said or whatever. So we went on and on for a little while. And I ended up buying it for, I think, probably 30 cents on the dollar from what he originally quoted me, because he still was trying to make what he felt he needed to make that quota. And really, Turkey and Istanbul, and I haven't been there in the last couple of years where it's gotten even worse with all of the social unrest, but they were already feeling it when I went there about 8 years ago. Mm. So they were really, I got some gorgeous things there. But so that is a haggling tip, okay? So you have to also, when you start haggling with or wanting to buy something, you have to go in and be relaxed, and they'll start talking to you. They'll want you to have tea, and they're sizing you up. They're trying to make you jump or sit down. They got these hagglers. It's in their blood. So, you know, you just have to really just not push anything, because it's all in the flow and in the timing. And also, you get a better deal if they like you. This is another thing that is really cultural, I think. If they like you as a person, they like to do business. They want their goods with somebody that they think is a good person or they like. If they don't like you as much, the price is higher, and they just as soon take advantage of you. Really go in there with an open mind and go in trying to always be fair, but get the best price that you can get. and break bread. I mean, and to have tea. I've drank so much tea before, and I've told some of them, look, you know, you're just showing me so much stuff I can't think. I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to take my time till I really can figure out what I need to get and what is not. And they're wonderful. They, you know, I have made so many friends that way that I can't even tell you all the stories about that. But I'm going to kind of go into my approach on how I approach the haggling because, you know, there's a whole kind of rhythm to the whole thing. And it's a little bit different in different parts of the world, but it's kind of the same thing. First of all, you walk in and you just start looking around. And you're just looking around, you know, just basically nonchalantly. And if something catches your eye, you know, you keep looking and then you kind of go back to it and say, and you just ask them, well, how much does that cost? Or, you know, what's the price of that? Or something like that. And they'll say, and they'll tell you what it is. And then you'll say, okay, well, thank you. And then you start walking out. And they'll say, well, what do you mean? You don't like it? Or is it too much? Or let me show you something else. So then it starts. And, I mean, they start like, oh, you try to figure out what the problem is, okay? And then you have to set in your mind really what you're willing to pay for it. Once they tell you what it is. And so they'll keep going on and whatever. You say, no, I don't like that one. I said, you know, I'll tell them, that really is pretty over there, but that is way too much money. And I'll tell them all the time that, you know, I'm not rich. I don't have a whole lot of money. I mean, I can only buy, you know, I don't have all kinds of money, you know? So, you know, when I go, there's another tip. Don't dress up. Don't look like you have money. I go real plain. I don't look like a real tourist with, you know, my big walking shoes and all this kind of stuff. I do have a backpack, but I try to dress just real simple, not a lot of makeup or even costume jewelry. You want to look like you kind of, you know, like you're not poor, but you're really middle class or, you know, they can't figure you out whether you have money or not. That's how you have to appear. Because if you have any hint, these people, oh, they're good at this. Okay? So then you tell them, look, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but if you'll sell it to me and then, like, say if something costs $100 and you're willing to pay $40, you say, well, $20, that's all I can pay. $20. I can't pay anymore. And they'll go, oh, my God, that is terrible. That's an insult. I mean, you know, they'll start on and on. What, you know, let me show you something else. I'll show you something that's cheap. Blah, blah, blah. They'll do all kinds of stuff. They'll try to act bad. They'll try to act nice. They'll try to show you something else. They'll say, look, I don't like anything else. All I like is that one, and all I'll pay is $20, okay? And then they'll go on and on. And so you have to know that the person who leaves, and this is the way that merchants think, the person who leaves with the money wins. So they are wanting to get at least some of your money. So another tip, bring cash. So then you can say, well, it's going to be cash, you know, or whatever. And they'll go, oh, you know, they'll do all kinds of stuff. Stay relaxed. The main thing is just stay relaxed. Joke with them, you know, telling them, look, I can't buy it. You know, that's all there is to. And I can tell you, you usually get it for $40. You know what I'm saying? But it might take you 45 minutes of all of this rigmarole and everything, you know, to get to that price. You know what I'm saying? Mm. But that's how it goes. That is really how haggling goes. And I'll tell you a couple of stories of some of the deals that I've made. Number one, Vietnam. Fabulous place for silk, clothes, fabrics, embroidered goods. Oh, God. Well, I went into this one shop and they had all these silk blouses and all these silk pashminas and scarves. And I thought, oh, these are great. And I asked the lady, how much are they? She said, $20. I said, $20? I said, oh, no, there, I can get these at the night market much cheaper. No, 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 no. And she said, oh, if you buy more, it's cheaper. And so I said, oh, okay, well, we'll see. So I decided, well, I was going to see how low I could go. And I wanted really to get the scarves for $5 a piece, you know, and she'd quoted me $20. And so I started looking. I said, yeah, these would be great souvenirs. And they are beautiful scarves. I mean, I'm telling you, everybody I gave them to, they just love them. I walked out with 10 scarves for $50. Yes, for $5 a piece. But they're all beautiful. And I've worn, I probably have 5 of them, and I've worn them all and gave the rest to my mother, sister, and, you know, some friends. But that's haggling. That is, you know, you go in there and you know what you want to pay, and then you stay, you know, you just don't act like you're going to give them your money unless they're going to come down to your price. And you never know. That day they might not have made very many sales. And some of these sales clerks that work in there, oh, God, if they don't sell something, they get fired. Mm. So they're under pressure, too. So that's one thing. Then another one of my favorite deals that I made, because this rug is gorgeous, in Marrakesh. Oh, that's another place. There's so many rugs in Marrakesh. If you want to buy a rug in Marrakesh, you better have somebody helping you, because otherwise you will really have completely, you just overload. It's just way too
just
much.
Just so many.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And they just start showing you. Well, I had this really nice guide, and he took me all through the Medina, and I used him for about 3 days. And I told him, I said, look, I want to go to all the tanning factories. I want to see things where it's made. And one thing I really want to buy is a nice handmade rug for my daughter's condo. I said, but I want something nice, but I want it for a great price. He took me to this wonderful place. Well, it didn't start out so great. They started showing me all this stuff, and, you know, they have the guys that come out and fly them down and flip them out and everything. I said, no, 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 I don't like any of that. I said, I like a lot of color, you know, rich colors, blah, blah, blah. I like black in it and all this kind of stuff. So there was one rug that was really nice. And I said, how much is that? And he said, $4,500. I said, $4,500? I'm not paying $4,500. I said, I'm going around the world, and this is only my second stop. Yeah. There's no way that I, you know, because I was thinking, you know, $500, you know, I will willing to spend, but not $4,500. So he kept on and on. I mean, we stayed there, and finally my guide kept going back and forth. I told my guide, I said, there's no way. Well, I knew this was a very fine shop, and I knew that rug was very fine. After about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, of drinking tea and going back and forth, and me just saying, no, 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 I don't have that kind of money. I'm not doing that. I said, okay, if you will send this home, pay for the freight, $800 is the lowest I'll go. And I knew the shipping would be about $250. Mm. He did it. And he let me charge it on my charge card because I didn't have that cash. And that's another thing. Don't reveal anything about your cash, because sometimes you'll want to use cash, and there are sometimes you have to use cash. But a lot of times, you might want to save your cash, and if they'll use a credit card, I'll do that every now and then, especially if you're having something shipped home, because you want the record of that.
And a little extra protection.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So that's another good story. Haggling is just something you have to practice at. If you're not good at it, so, you know, just to kind of wrap up my comments on haggling. It really is like a game, and you have to get used to it. You even can watch YouTube videos on how to haggle.
Mm.
Yes. So, you know, I would recommend that just to kind of get you seeing how they start asking you questions and trying to switch you into something else or whatever. And just, you know, because it's funny. If you play around with them in their game, they like that. You know what I'm saying? But you have to do it in a nice, friendly, well-meaning manner. If you are any kind of way greedy or cold or like, or looking down on them or something like that, oh, they can read you much better than you can read them. So
it's like a lot of things you talk about. It's like the attitude that you're bringing to it, bringing fun, enjoyment. If you're bringing those things to it, it's going to be a lot more in just a pleasant experience, it sounds like.
Yeah. And bottom line is, don't feel bad if you walk away.
Yeah.
If it's just not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And just leave and say, look, it's just not meant to be. You know, your next customer, I used to always tell them, your next customer is going to have enough money that they can buy it. That's what I usually tell them.
Let's get into some of your tips. And I was thinking we could group them by topic. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Okay.
Budgeting. We've already covered some of the money issues with shopping, including shopping in your overall trip budget.
Okay, this is really important, especially if you've got this habit, you know, the shopaholic habit. You have got to budget. And this is how I approach every trip. I, you know, set a budget, a limit on how much I'll spend, whether it's $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever. So that is the total amount that I can spend, okay? So I will, you know, get my what I call my fixed cost or my hard cost down, my how much my hotel, my plane ticket, my transportation to and from the hotel, my visa, my travel insurance, any pre-trip things I have to buy for the trip, I consider them my hard cost. An example, say my trip is going to cost, or I have budgeted $10,000, and I'm going to be, it's going to be a 10-day trip somewhere. So say my fixed cost, like I said, the airline, the hotel, transportation to and from the hotel, et cetera, comes out to be $5,000. So that's basically $500 a day that I'll be spending or have already spent before I leave. So I only have $5,000 left to eat, to go to the museums, to go entertainment, pay for tours, any miscellaneous things, because there's always something miscellaneous that you have to buy or pick up. You lose your, you know, adapter or just something. So then the next thing I'll do is I'll ballpark how much I think that I will spend on food, you know, per day. Some places are more expensive than others. And if I want to go to some fine dining, I always know that I'm going to be spending more money. So I try to ballpark all of these variable costs and how much that'll be. And typically, you know, that's around $300, could be $300 a day. Or less. It could be $150. But let's just, to keep this simple, it's $300 a day. So you're up now to $800 a day. So what you know is you've got $200 a day to shop, which for the total trip is $2,000. So what I do is, when I'm traveling, I keep up with how much I'm spending on my variable cost every day. And if I go under that $300, I know I have some more money left over to shop. So, but if I go over, I can't buy as much. So that's the first way I start getting a grip on just shopping and how I'm going to spend my money. Because it's very easy to blow money and waste money and put, you know, a lot of charges on a credit card, which that can ruin your trip when you come home. You could have had a great trip, but when those costs come in and you see and you go, oh gosh, this is going to take me a year and a half to pay this off or whatever. I mean, that is, don't do that.
The credit card hangover.
Oh no, don't do that. So that's how I do it. And you know, I try to save my big purchases for last. I like to do a lot of, like I talked about at the beginning of the show, reconnaissance, looking at a lot of stuff, especially if something's going to be a little bit more expensive. And then, you know, I'll talk to the owner or shop owner or the artist or whatever and tell them, you know, that's really, you know, I'm at the beginning of the trip, and I'll tell them, if at the end I feel like I can afford, I'll come back and I'll buy it, okay? And so I try to save the bigger things at the end, because maybe I can pull back on, you know, eating or whatever if I really want something and it's more than I had thought that I was going to pay. Say, it causes me to spend $2,500 on shopping, and maybe I can, you know, walk more rather than whatever, or not eat as much, or eat more sandwiches. Oh, I don't know. You know, it just a cut out of a meal here or there. You know, you can kind of do it. Women who love to shop do it all the time, so you know I'm good at it. you know, that's how I start with the budgeting. And I really do recommend, if you don't think like that, you ought to think like that, because it's a good habit, okay?
You touched a little bit about this, but what about choosing what and where to buy?
This is where your pre-trip research comes in. And I can't stress this enough, because you can go to places in like, say, Portugal. You think, oh, yeah, I've heard a long time ago or somewhere that they have good port wine. And, yeah, I've seen Portuguese pottery and tile. I mean, you kind of know, but you don't totally know all of the wonderful things. Like when I went there before, I realized that they made a lot of things out of cork. And I mean, a lot of different things, beautiful things. And you don't see a lot of things in cork. Cork kind of comes in and out of vogue or fashion. And then also boiled wool. I talked about that a little bit at the earlier of the podcast. But they make gorgeous things out of boiled wool. And I thought, boiled wool, that doesn't sound like very good. But, oh, my gosh, it's amazing what they do. So do your pre-trip research and really know what is unique to this place that you should buy. Try to figure out before you go, roughly what the cost will be of these types of items, etc. So Google, like I shared, you know, shopping in Lisbon, what to buy in Lisbon, where's the best place to buy cork in Lisbon, weekend markets in Lisbon, etc. Just Google as much as phrases that you can think about shopping or specific things that you want. Then, you know, of course, your guidebooks, but that YouTube is really, really good. And I can tell you that gives you great tips. And what I'm going to do now, just briefly, is I'm going to share with you some of the sites that has come up to me recently where I've been researching. I'm interested in going to Bali. And I'm thinking about going to Bali in the fall. It's a great time to go. It's right at the low season, and this is when the prices are the best there. But Bali has great prices on a lot of different types of things, especially like casual wear, sandals, maxi dresses, you know, sarongs, you know, beachy kinds of things, as well as, I learned, knockoffs and leather goods and jewelry, all kinds of stuff. Well, I Googled YouTube shopping in Bali. And I want to go through some of the Google or the YouTubes that came up that I watched, and they were all, I learned something from every one of them. So I just want to go into it real quickly because I want people to really not forget to use that YouTube, because it'll teach you a lot when you hear other people and see them, see the goods, learn about their experiences. It will help you before you go and once you're there.
Almost like a little case study. This is good.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. So I put in shopping in Bali and what to buy in Bali. Both of those in YouTube. First one came up, shopping prices in Bali at Kuta Ligon. And this is a fixed price shop. And it was very good because the young gentleman who was there, he showed the different items and the prices. It also said, make sure you know your European size. That's very important because in Bali, they go by European size, not Chinese size, which that's a whole nother sizing system, which you really need to know that. Because if you wear a medium, you're going to wear extra large in China. And that's really the truth. So the sizing systems are important. And he also said, beware in the bigger markets that are geared to the tourist, they don't come down as much. Mm. And so know that. The second one was called What to Do and What Not to Do, Bali Haul. Now, there are a lot of bloggers out there and a lot of people who like to shop, especially these young fashionistas that do these YouTube videos on my latest haul and all the things that they bought for all these great prices. So this girl said, oh, Bali is knockoff heaven. So if you like knockoffs, this is the place to go. And she said they're good knockoffs and bad knockoffs, but this is knockoff haven. Nike shoes, oh, everything, they make it. So, you know, I share with you a word of caution that this is knockoff heaven. But if you like knockoffs, then that might be a turn on to you. But also know that it's different and it's getting more and more difficult for people who buy knockoffs to bring them into the country and not be either fined or could be charged with something. So I just share that with you. You need to be very careful with the knockoffs. Okay, the next thing, the next video was haggling in Bali. I didn't know there were big hagglers there.
Haggle. Now we're learning, yeah.
And the thing I learned there, last price. You say last price, last price, last price. You don't tell them your price. You keep saying, last price. You know, no, way too much. I don't have money. I'm not rich. You know, I only can spend. And then you say, well, really, what is last price? Last price. And you keep on, you know, and finally they'll go, ah, and then I'll go, well, what about $5 last price? Ah, okay. That's how it goes. And then he's all laughing. They put them in, you know, bag it up for you and everything. So it's something else. You have to get in. It's like a small theater or something. Okay, that was all very informative to me. That, you know, I saw some of the quality of the goods, what they look like, the colors, the designs that are typical of Bali. You know that they do haggle, where to get stuff, and those kinds of things. So I'm already kind of set that I'll know, well, maybe I'll want to spend $150 on clothes and maybe $250 on a nice bracelet or some earrings and a ring or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of gives me an idea, so it helps me with my budget. Okay? So that is the value of YouTube. It teaches you a lot.
I was just going to say, you got technique, you got items to look out for, you got kind of everything you were hoping to get from just a couple of videos there.
Yeah, and another thing, it led me to another series of videos about how to recognize different knockoffs.
Yeah.
And how a bad knockoff and a good knockoff versus the real thing. I mean, it is amazing what you can find now on the internet, especially in YouTube, It's like a mini school lesson,
yeah,
or class. So highly, highly recommend that. Okay, so here are some of the things that I think that are very unique that I have bought in different areas of the world that I want to share. Because if you're interested in going to these places, or you really like to shop, and this might give you a reason to go there. China. And this is, I'm going to say, except Hong Kong, China. Because Hong Kong is a lot different than really mainland China that just opened up. Beautiful cloisonné vases, beautiful cloisonné. Anything in cloisonné is beautiful, whether it's from the little animals that they make or the jewelry or whatever. Then the porcelains are beautiful, you know, whether it's black and white or celadon or whatever. Gorgeous, gorgeous. Jade is very nice. There's silk, things made in silk, whether it's pillow covers or silk jackets, silk clothing. It is very nice. Now, the thing in China that you have to know, and I did mention this earlier, if you want to buy something, you have to be very careful. And if you want to make sure you're buying something that is what it is said to be and what it appears to be, is you have to go to a state-approved store or vendor. And that they have the, you know, their whole reputation is based on truth and authenticity. And that in China, if you really want to buy something that's worth something, you have to do that. Okay, and one of my guys did take me to one of those stores, and it's completely different than everything else you see. Okay, Marrakesh, great caftans. Oh, my God. I ended up buying 10 caftans there because they're so beautiful, colorful. They have certain kinds of trimming that mean things in different colors. Oh, I went to town, as well as ethnic jewelry. The Berbers are an ethnic group that came from like the Atlas Mountains and the outlying areas in Morocco and came to Casablanca and Marrakesh and created the Medina and these markets. Well, they're still there, and they make some beautiful jewelry. And I bought several things from an artist there. An elderly gentleman made beautiful necklaces with old Moroccan money. Oh, they were beautiful. So that the ethnic jewelry in Morocco is really beautiful and the price is great. Leather goods. Oh my God. They have so many tanneries in the Medina, and so many. There's alleyways of shoes, those babushas, I don't know exactly how you call them, but those painted toed leather slippers that I love so much. Oh, and they have so many ways that they embellish them and everything. They're beautiful, even just the plain, all the different plain colors. But wonderful leather goods there, and at very good prices. Venice, here again, shopping wasn't as good as it used to be. You know, they used to sell fabulous jewelry, real jewelry. They were noted for that. Movie stars used to go to the St. Mark's Square to buy their jewelry. In fact, my husband, 20, 30-something years ago, bought me a beautiful gold necklace from there. And it's one of my cherished pieces. But now, I think you can still get some very fine things in terms of Murano glass. But you have to be very careful. You must go to a store that has the state stamp or the government stamp. It's best to go to the island of Murano. They have several factories there that you can tour, and they have different galleries. And you have to stick with the stores that are government approved. But you can find some beautiful things, and they're at pretty good prices. I found the smaller things were more expensive in relation to, you know, what you were getting. The chandeliers, to me, were just so well priced. I mean, they had some gorgeous hand-blown chandeliers for $1,500, $2,500, and I mean, they were stunning. Also, Burano is another outlying area of Venice, and it's noted for its linens and the embroidery work. And here again, there are a couple of Chinese shops there, but mostly not. They're Burano is kind of has a whole mystique to themselves. So, but it's worth going there, and it's a beautiful day. Even if you don't buy anything there, the food is great. You can sit outside. It's a very colorful place, and the ride out there is really pleasant. Austria, white wine, and Hungary, white wine, both of them fabulous. And they'll put them in the little wooden boxes and everything. You can have some of them shipped home. But what I like so much is they don't have the sulfites. So you can enjoy and drink up a storm, and you don't get, you know, tipsy. And you don't have a headache the next morning. It's amazing. And I mean, in Italy too, especially northeastern Italy. I mean, it's cheaper than water. That's pretty inexpensive. So, and Dubai, I talked about the gold souk. Oh my God, if you want some gold, go there. You know, it's based on unit ounce price and that kind of gram weight, but they will deal with you. Just depends on, you know, how the merchant's doing. Oud perfume, fabulous. If you like musky, strong perfume, these perfumes, whether you use them for your home as a aroma, you know, kind of aroma, not therapy, but the scents are fabulous, as well as the real perfumes. I mean, you know, they talk about that it's an aphrodisiac. You can believe it, because they are they're so earthy smelling, and there are different scents to them, whether it's the musk or more floral. And it depends on your nose what you like. But I can tell you, that's a real perfume, and it lasts and lasts. Now, you can take a bath, and you can still smell it on you. So if you like that kind of perfume, a lot of people don't, but I do. France, wonderful for upscale brands in clothing. Just know, very expensive. You know, country French, if you like that look, whether it's, you know, the goods from Provence, the tablescapes or the linens, etc. They're still kind of pricey, but maybe you can catch some of them at the weekend markets. But they're unique and they're very beautiful. If you really like it, you ought to go and, you know, budget before you're going. If you really want that, say, I'm going to spend $150 on this tablecloth or $300 or whatever, but you'll cherish it. You will really enjoy it, but you have to plan for it, okay? Also, they have tapestries. I love tapestries. A lot of people, they think they're so old-fashioned and everything. But you can buy some really nice French tapestries, but you have to watch out again that they're not made in China. They're French, and then there's the ones made in China. So stay away from the tourist places. But I went to a place in Paris where I bought some beautiful tapestries that I still have, you know, Sir Galahad. And it's just some things that you would never see that are just so stunning. One is a French noble lady, and she's walking. And I think it had something to do with the story of the Black Knight, but she has this greyhound-looking dog, and she's kind of walking down like a cloistered hall. This is a gorgeous tapestry. I bought it, and it hangs over my bed. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So, you know, you can find some really stunning things that you'll live with till, you know, you can't have them anymore. You have to downsize. Okay. France, don't forget those duty-free shops. If you like Louis Vuitton, Hermes, Cartier, you know, look for that in the airport, and you'll be surprised. You know, it can come on down as much as 30-35%. Istanbul, quickly, Grand Bazaar, I mean, almost everything you want to buy there. Rugs, pashminas, hand-embroidered linens, and some beautiful silk. They do a lot of silk embroidery. I mean, it is to die for. If you like rich colors, I mean, I have this one tulip tablecloth that could be a bedspread that's made in these rich, rich colors, all silk and hand embroidered with texture in it. It's just, it's so stunning. I mean, it's like, it truly is a work of art. So, and then the Islamic pottery and jewelry and calligraphy art. I learned a lot about calligraphy and the meaning of it and the spiritualness and how it evolved, etc., when I went there. And it's beautiful. In fact, I bought my husband 3 pen and inks that they have these symbols of man and good fortune and a few other things. Whatever I bought him, I thought was, you know, very, I guess, apropos, or I wanted to share that feeling towards him. So that was really, I like that. And because it's beautiful, it's very simple, but it's flowy and it's beautiful. Then Hanoi, oh my God, if you love silk, they have the best tailors there, and they have great stylish-looking silk, a lot of washable silk, silk that you can pack. And they have all of these tailors, young girls. I bought one girl. I spent not a lot of money, but, I mean, she made several pieces for me in less than 24 hours. She took my measurement. She made like a free-form jacket, 2 pairs of all silk, silk pants. I bought a silk white dress from her that was kind of flowy with black tie-dye, and it is to die for. And I also bought a silk velvet jacket from her that was padded, that kind of had the Chanel windowpane look. Just gorgeous. And then the thing that is really to die for, I bought this T-length, very lightweight black silk velvet coat with the frog buttons, and then the sleeves can turn up and have the silk lining in them. This coat is so wonderful because it's lightweight, but it gives you warmth, but it's not too heavy. You can wear it with jeans. You can wear it with a dress. You can wear it fancy. You can wear it casual, dressy. I mean, this is, in fact, I do have a marketplace on my website, and I'm going to look to offer some of these silk velvet jackets and coats that are made in Vietnam. They are beautiful, and they're so well priced. And the pants that she made were like $15 a pair, handmade. One was like longer than culotte, but not
like all capri length.
And just beautiful cut to them. And then she made me one that, you know, went below the ankle, but and then the jacket and everything. But she was just like in beautiful buttons, these kind of mother pearl looking buttons. So Hanoi is great if you like silk. Yeah, I've already talked about the scarves, all those scarves that I bought. But it's very...
It sounds so elegant. That's the thing.
Yes, they have wonderful taste. And if you bring them a picture of what you want, like if you want something that looks like a Chanel suit or a Valentino dress with all these ruffles and everything, oh, let me tell you, they can whip it out. They are so talented when it comes to that. Italy... it's still nice, but not quite as good as it used to be. Shoes, of course, clothes, purses, you know, wine, your designer goods, but you're going to pay for them. Not as expensive as France, though. Oh, France is very expensive.
So where do you find the things to buy at the best prices?
Okay, well, I've kind of gone over this several times. The markets, yes, but they can't be tourist markets. They need to be like weekend markets where the locals go, where the local vendors come. Those are the best. Like there's a great one in Madrid that I like on Saturday. And you can find all kinds of things. I mean, I even bought underclothes there. But they were beautiful. They were all lace and everything. I was like, oh, yeah, this is beautiful.
Ooh, la, la.
Yes, it was. And they were very priced very well. So, and of course, the individual shops. Now, for your designer goods, not maybe your real high-priced ones, but, you know, some that are just a little bit under that. And Gucci can be in that category, too. That they're outlet malls in Western Europe now. Yes, there's a couple in France, Italy, oh, right around Milan, and seek those out. I mean, they, you can find some good deals at those outlet malls. So that's a tip, besides the duty-free shop. Then factories. Try to find the factories, you know, like China, in China and Russia and different places like in Bali. You can go actually to the factories, and they'll have little shops there, and you can buy from them. And usually when you do that, they'll ship everything home for you, which is really good because, you know, there's no you're not worried about it breaking, or if it does, they'll replace it, etc. Then also try to buy directly from the artist or the artisan. That is the best thing to do. And another thing that I forgot when it came to where to buy at the best price, ask your concierge. They are great. You know, do your research, but they'll tell you, oh, yeah, no, that shop was good, or this artist doesn't, you know, have a gallery anymore and you can't get it. You know, give all your ideas to the concierge and let him kind of filter them, because that'll help you from wasting a lot of time. Here again, I just want to make a little note of the art galleries. I really have hardly ever gotten a good deal at an art gallery. Now, in Russia, I am friends with a woman that owns a travel agency. She was actually my first private guide the first time I went there. And I really liked her because she was so well-educated and she was very professional. She was very into in with all the artists and the art community. She had written a book with a gentleman from London about the reconstruction and renovation of the palaces of St. Petersburg. So she just knew everybody who was, you know, anybody. So I told her, I said, I love art, and I would like to bring home maybe an oil painting, a Russian oil painting. And so she took me to the academy, the arts academy that's connected to the university there, and they have a wonderful gallery that has all of the up-and-coming artists. So those of you who are going to St. Petersburg, you want art from the artists not only the government but the professors and everybody who's into that feel like they are going to be the next latest and greatest, they are shown in that gallery. So each time now that I've been to St. Petersburg, I've bought something there, and the prices are good there. Much better than if they were in the galleries. Now, I have one story I want to share with you that shows you how the gallery owners can be really, really, they are rough to deal with. My husband and I, this was about 30 years ago, we went to Italy during the Christmas holidays we were going to spend 2 weeks in Italy and then a week at the spa in Baden-Baden. So we started out in Venice, and my husband blew a lot of money in Venice, bought me that gold necklace, and then he bought all these shoes and stuff, and he never buys anything. My husband's an architect, and he doesn't buy a lot, but what he buys is always really quality, but he doesn't have a lot because he doesn't require a lot, and he's not like me at all with all this shopping, but he went to town. I thought, oh, my God. We're not going to be able to afford the rest of this trip if he keeps going like this. So we got to Milan, and we were walking. We went into a gallery, and, I mean, he fell in love with this oil painting. To this day, I have to hear about this oil painting from time to time. And so I asked the gallery owner, well, how much is this? And he said, like $5,500. And I said, oh. Well, you know, and I told Pete, I said, there's no way, we can't buy this, you know. And he was going, oh, but I really, really like this Astrid. And I just said, well, come on, let's go. We just, you know, we can't buy this. So we, even though I was buying some stuff, yeah. But I said, we can't buy this. You don't need this. So we left. But before we left Milan, I decided, well, I was going to try to go in there and deal with this art gallery owner. So I went in there and I started to say, I said, well, you know, we're going, we have this other stops we're going at, and, you know, it's more than I want to spend, but my husband really loves it, and how about if I give you $2,500 cash? And that gallery owner looked at me and he said, for you, lady, it's $8,000. He not only was he mad, he was so, like, he just couldn't believe it. He said, he wanted to say, you are so tacky, and if you can't afford it, get out of here. You know what I'm saying? That's really what his attitude was. Well, my husband was in the back, and my husband has impeccable manners. He would never have done that. And, I mean, he knew how insulting and just non-cosmopolitan, everything bad that I had done. I tried to do that, tried to get it for us. So we left without that painting. But I still hear about it. But the gallery owners are really hard to deal with. So that leads me into the next place where you need to look for these areas. There's more and more all over the world, there are designated art districts where the government is sponsoring buildings and areas that artists can live and work in and share their work. Like in Shanghai and in Beijing, they both have great art districts, and they're really hip. So I went to both of them, and they were great experiences. And you can get good prices there, and you can meet the artist, and you can, you know, maybe even arrange to have a payment plan on something if something's really fine and you want it and blah, blah, blah. So look for these specific districts now. They're becoming more and more popular and a way to create business for these kinds of people where they can live and work and
like destinations that are for art too.
It's real cool. Usually they have music outside and then they have good places to eat and that kind of thing. So it's there's kind of a high-minded creative vibe, which is really good. I'm trying to think of the name of store. There was one store that said, I better not say this over there. But it was like, you know, I got it going on, but a little bit more racy. Just crazy stuff, but very creative, okay? Then also in your Chinatowns, your little Indias, in the areas where a lot of ethnic people are. If you want to buy things that are not really fine but are well-priced, you know, a lot of clothes, especially trendy clothes that we wear now, that you wear one season or a couple years and you throw them away, you don't want to spend any real money on them, they're great places to get them.
Fast fashion, right?
Oh, yeah, fast fashion. Oh, those are wonderful. Then here again, the weekend markets, I love them because that's where the locals go. So try to find where the locals go because you're going to see vintage things in there, things from their grandmother sometime when they want all of them. There are a lot of decent. You can find some cool things. Pop-up shops. Pop-up shops now are, you know, they are becoming au courant. I mean, you even see Chanel sometimes being sold in pop-up shops. So, you know, don't think that they are not good. I mean, I know I was in Beijing one time, and the sun was really hot, and I forgot my hat. So one of the things in China, some of the ladies still use parasols. So I thought, I'm going to buy me a parasol because I saw these pop-up shops in this one area and they were selling all kinds of things, so I wanted to get a parasol. I bought the most beautiful, lacy, kind of gold and silver and gray and black. I mean, this thing was just, I mean, this is a museum-looking parasol. And then I needed some flip-flops there, too. $10.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it's still so beautiful, you know, and I love it. So those are some of the places where I think you can find the best deals. try to always stay relaxed and don't get too tired or get too emotional. Because, you know, when you, say, are in areas where the merchants are haggling and everything, you're going to end up paying too much, you know. So, and don't act like you love something ever, even if you are just dying for it. I mean, just say, oh, I don't know, come on, you know, I can't afford it, or, you know, I don't have to have it, you know, and be willing to leave. You know what I'm saying? But you got to, if you don't know how to act, you better practice your acting skills because they are real good. I mean, they've been doing this. It's in their genes, yeah. Okay? Carry cash. You'll get a better price and won't be gouged as much if you are willing to pay cash, you know? And then here again, don't show that you've got all this cash in a wallet. Have a little change purse, put your bills in your backpack zipped up or somewhere, and even have smaller bills, you know, so you don't have to be doing a lot of change, because in that changing, they can say, oh, no, it was $30 and not $10, you know, and then you go, no, I don't want to buy it. Give me my money back. Oh, then it goes like, oh, you're like that, blah, blah. So, but even if they get loud, don't worry about it. They all loud. You know, that's just the way they are. Okay, so that's just kind of, you know, some of my tips about the price gouging or what's fake. I mean, it just comes from experience and, you know, like I said, go to the state-approved places and ask your concierge, use some common sense, and, you know, just have a budget. Don't just, you know, say, oh, well, I know that I had this one thing that I actually went over my budget a little bit for this, but it was so beautiful. My guide in Beijing, well, she knew I liked jade. She could see every time I was looking at it. She says, I'm going to take you to the state store where only diplomats and businessmen and people go in there. It's really, you know, and I thought, oh, God, this is going to be expensive. But I wanted to go just to see what the really good stuff looked like. Well, I found this beautiful ball on this brass stand, and it was a cat's eye, and it was like a seafoam green cat's eye, and I actually have it on my foyer on the furniture. What do you call it? The break front under my mirror, but. In China, these cat's eyes are supposed to give good luck and diffuse anything bad and give you wisdom. It's a very rare stone, and especially so big. The size of it, that my ball, it's not huge, but it's beautiful. The color was beautiful. The shape of the tiger eye, the way it is and slants from smaller to bigger. I just loved it. And I asked the guy, I said, how much is that? I said, I want to take it. And she said, $650. And I really didn't want to spend that. I would have been happy if I would have left with $200. But it was so rare. And it is stunning. This is stunning. I said, you know, I want good jade and I want this. But then when I get down to the real thing, I'm going, oh, I don't know, you know. But I did it, and I love it. It's one of my favorite things I have because it is really rare, and it's beautiful. Everybody who sees it, they just go, oh, my gosh. You know, that is just, it's just, you can tell, you know. So, you know, those state-owned places and the guides and taking you there, they'll protect you, you know. They might take you to some of the places that are a little bit more expensive, but if you really want quality, you know, you have to go ahead and pay for it. Or you just walk away. Don't buy it.
And I liked your definition earlier about that really wasting, like if you buy something that you're not going to use, that's a waste. That's a real loss. And I think that's a good reminder in this sort of section of tips is that if you buy something, you never use it, that's really the loss there, the bad purchase.
It is. And you can get kind of swept up in the things you see. After a while, you think, like, They kind of just wear on you, and you think, oh, yeah. But then you get home, and you go, oh, no.
What was I thinking?
Yeah.
All right, our final grouping of tips. I want to know about, again, this is the ultimate of the practicality, handling your new treasures. We're on the road. You got to pack these things up, carting them around, shipping them home separate from your luggage, all those details. What tips do you have for us on this, Astrid?
Oh, yeah. If you're into shopping, you're gonna buy too much. So you're going to have to figure out how to get it home. And I can tell you, it can cost you more money, and then the deal that you made, it was a bad
blown. It gets blown easy.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things that I suggest. First of all, anything that, when you're shopping, first of all, I always like to shop with a backpack, okay? I go simply dressed and the backpack. You know, I try to blend in and, you know, just look like I'm really looking rather than really on the hunt. But in the backpack, I will have a large tote and that is folded up. So if I really get, you know, I'm going to buy 10 caftans, I don't want to be walking around with black bags with caftans, because when you walk around with your purchases in black bags or bags, oh, you're not going to get a good deal in the next shop. You are going to be termed as a turkey. So if you have a tote and you put it, you know, you have the backpack, but you put that one on your arm or whatever, they think that they're not so sure. Maybe you just have groceries in it or whatever. But if you're walking around with a couple of black bags, they think, ah, yeah, she's here to shop, you know.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then, you know, you'll be able to carry them, too, back to wherever you are, you know, where you're staying. Now, packing. If there's anything breakable, you have to always try to insist that they put it in the bubble wrap before you leave the shop. And, you know, in Europe, they still, in a lot of the nicer, you know, smaller shops, they'll bubble wrap it and wrap it in nice printed paper. And really, especially in Portugal, I keep thinking about that. They were great at that. In fact, some of us said, you don't have to do it that nice, you know. You know, but so you want it to be protected, okay? And then you have to decide, now, can I take this in my carry-on or on my tote that I'm going to bring in the cabin of the aircraft? Because anything breakable, you don't want to put in your suitcase. Because if you put it in your suitcase, even bubble wrapped, it could get damaged. And I mean, I've had a few things like that. I've learned the hard way. So do not do that. If you've got these kinds of things, and a lot of times when you buy them from bigger places, they'll ship them home for you. So you just get that particular shop or wherever you've bought it to send it, okay, to ship it home. Now, if you bought some bigger things like rugs, art, china, crystal, they almost always know that they have to ship it home. So you definitely want to do that. There's no way that, I mean, I've had the rug dealer say, oh, we could wrap it up and make it a little, you know, a little small square or whatever. So no, it's going to be too heavy, blah, 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 you know. So don't do that. Now, sometimes I've even shipped my own clothes back. It brought the things back, you know, so that's a reverse.
Yeah.
But if you bought too much, like I'll use an example. I went around the world, and in Marrakesh, I went crazy because I got so many good deals, and I love the exotic things there. So I bought my daughter, besides the rug, I bought her a leather pouf, and that's one of those leather seats that you blow up, and you can use them as a footstool or a little chair. You see them in Morocco. They're, you know, really ethnic, but they're beautiful. Oh, and you can buy them for like $10, $15, sometimes $20. So I bought her a pouf. And so I decided, well, I can put the book I bought and all those caftans I bought and some of the pashminas that I bought and some of my old clothes that I'm not going to wear now because I'm going to hotter climates. So I went to the manager of the Riyadh where I was staying. I said, I need to ship these home. He said, no problem. I would get somebody to accompany you to the post office and we'll get them shipped. So I took that poof down there. They looked through it. I had to declare what was in there, sent it, and off it went. Now, not only did I not have to carry around all that, which would have made me have over baggage, which that would have meant six more stops. I would have had to pay $200 a piece. So I would have had $1,200 worth of over baggage fees, even in business class. So I said, no, I can't do that. So it saved me the fees. Plus, when you send things home, I mean, you have to declare what you put on there. But most of the time, you know, there's no duty on it or anything like that, unless there's specific things coming from specific countries. So if you're bringing all this into the United States and you're over $800, you're going to pay some duty, and you don't want to not declare it, okay? So that's another thing. You can send it home, and then you can comfortably go through through customs. And, you know, you're not over the $800. So that is really good. So, and I have sent back things lots of times. In fact, that's one of my husband's big fears. What's going to be coming in those boxes before she gets home? So, but I have never not had anything arrive.
No problems with the shipping.
No. In fact, I even had one time when I went to Istanbul, I did buy quite a few rugs from this one guy. I mean, he really got me.
He came to your house to visit, okay? Yeah, we got it.
No. I mean, this guy, he sent... I had bought some other stuff, and I said, look, I don't know how to get all this stuff. He said, I'll put the stuff in the rugs. I mean, let me tell you, so I have never not gotten anything. So I must tell you that, you know, don't be afraid to ship. And it is really a great service. And it keeps you from lugging all of these things around. Because I tell you, I've almost knocked my back off on the last day going transatlantic, having to change planes twice, having a big tote that must weigh 80 pounds. I'm pitiful, filled with bronze and books. I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, it's so, don't do that. You know, it's worth spending a little bit more money, but in the end, it'll really save you a lot of money. So, Catherine, I'm going to just kind of wrap it up by saying, you know, really, if shopping is your cup of tea, and I know this has been a long podcast, and we're going to probably break it up in a couple of sessions, but I do love to shop, and shopping can be a real learning experience. It can be very enjoyable. Some people don't like it, but the people who really do, the more you know about it and the better you are at it, it'll make your trip even better, you know. So a couple of just ending comments. Do your pre-trip research, very key. Set a shopping budget. Know what you want to buy and try to figure out where you want to buy it, who has the best prices. Buy items that you will use or, you know, you really will enjoy in the future. Try to never do any kind of impulse buying just because you think it looks real nice, because it'll be a waste of money. So, you know, I really feel like the things that you buy when you're traveling, and when you buy them wisely, they're things that you'll treasure in the future. They'll give you lots of lasting, wonderful memories and a lot of pleasure. And if any of you listeners could come to my home, you would see all of the things that I've bought around the world that I really love, and I love living with them. So I'll end with saying, go forth, go shopping when you're traveling solo.
Before you go forth, you're going to have to pack your bags, and Astrid has an amazing packing list for you that you can have. Just go to her website, astridtravel.com. Right there on the homepage, it's complimentary, available for you, her packing list. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and really find it any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. If you have any questions for Astrid or a comment about this show, we'd love to hear from you. We love your feedback. You can go to astridtravel.com and leave a comment about this show or really anything else. Thank you so much for listening. If you have not shopped yourself out, we look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.